it's Flo, and this is my impression of a politician. I believe in the people, and their cars, and Progressive, and the fact that you, yes, you can plug in Snapshot to save even more money for being a good driver. I also believe in Sasquatch, but more as a joke, but also kind of seriously.
Safe drivers save with Snapshot from Progressive.
I approve of this message, and Sasquatch, if you are real, you can totally be my running mate.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Snapshot not available in all states.
Blog Talk Radio.
At the National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett, and I want to welcome the callers and chatters to Research at the National Archives and Beyond. This show will provide individuals interested in genealogy and history an opportunity to listen, learn, and take action. If you have logged in as a guest, and I see wonderful guests in the chat room today, please sign in through your Facebook account or Blog Talk Radio. Well, it's coming, October 1st, A Place Called Desire. Now, this is a show, and it's a special show, and I am just so excited about it. And I'm so happy that Leonard Smith, producer, genealogist, author, will share with us a unique project to chronicle the story of an African-American community located in the upper Ninth Ward of New Orleans, Louisiana, called Desire. Leonard Smith has worked tirelessly to interview residents of this community to capture the essence of what it meant for African-American families to become homeowners after World War II and one of the first communities designated for returning veterans. In addition, this self-contained community of schools and grocery stores and theaters and religious institutions provided the opportunity for the residents to develop a strong bond with their humble beginnings. This community was devastated by major events such as Hurricane Betsy and Katrina, the Louisiana Agriculture Landfill Class Action Suit, and the Black Panther Shootout. While these events made major headlines, the community produced educators, business leaders, healthcare professionals, judges, attorneys, CEOs of major corporations, and many, many more. The Kickstarter campaign will provide the needed funds to bring this story to life. So let me welcome my special friend, genealogist and producer, Leonard Smith, to discuss A Place Called Desire. Welcome, Leonard.
Wow, thank you for the introduction, Bernice, and thank you for having me on your show.
Well, Leonard, I am just so excited about this project. And we talk about genealogy, and we talk about oral histories. And most of the time, it's about what's happening in your family. But you're taking this to another level. So tell us the connection between genealogy and what you're doing with A Place Called Desire.
Well, you know, Bernice, it's been a project of mine that I've had for a while, actually, after I did the documentary on Miss Yvonne Bush. This was kind of going to be the second part of that because she taught at Culver High School, which is in the Desire community. And, of course, as time goes on, you know, other projects come around and you don't get a chance to finish it. So back in 2008, myself and Valencia Hawkins, who was the librarian at the public library at the time, she's the associate producer for this project. And what we decided to do is actually tell the story of the community that we grew up in. And so it's actually telling still my story, my genealogy, my family history, because so much of my family was involved in this community. You know, we moved there in 1964, but my grandmother, who lived around the corner from us, was there since 1955. And it's a community that a lot of people have always heard things about it, but it has never always been on the positive side. It's always been negative, you know, negativity about, you know, desire this, desire that. And, you know, it's time for us to really tell the story from the inside looking out. And so what I've decided to do is actually interview the individuals and let the community tell the story. And it's been very exciting because there's been, you know, stories that I didn't know about. Of course, I've done a lot of research on the community, but as you talk to individuals, you'd be surprised at all of the stories that you may not have known yourself that comes out. And, of course, as you verify these things, it becomes another story, another chapter in the documentary.
And have you found that people really can remember way back when this community was forming to become the community that it is today?
Well, you know,
yesterday.
I have interviewed a 94-year-old, a 95-year-old, and a 96-year-old. And it's amazing that they all basically told the same story, but from their point of view. And that is what amazes me is that in spite of the years that have gone by, they always remember their life and living in Desire and how it plays such an important role in their life. And so it's a good story. You know, I have some younger people as well and myself in that 60 group that we talk about growing up in the 60s and 70s in Desire. But those pioneers, those who started when the community started, you know, back in 1945, still knows or remembers when they purchased the house, how much they paid for it, what it was like living there. There was no streets, there were no lights, and what they had to do. There was no running water in some cases because they hadn't put the plumbing in the houses yet. And so the stories are just so interesting to me, and I know that as people get to hear the stories of Desire, they'll say, wow, what a community.
That's right. And I wonder, if for people that come to New Orleans, is this like the forgotten community, or they never knew about this community?
Well, you know, considering the amount of people that was back there in the 60s and 70s, at one time it probably peaked up to close to 20,000 people. And to say that that's a big part of the city, other than the negativity that we actually heard in the press, nobody really knew about Desire. You know, as you mentioned in the introduction of all the different people that have come out of Desire, success stories, and, you know, people from actually every walk of life have actually ventured there in Desire, and they got their start in Desire. You know, we can go on and talk about the names that you may hear all the time, like Marshall Falk, who, you know, he prepped at Culver. You know, you had Pam Giles, who was listed as the fastest woman in the world in the 70s. In the Olympics, she won a silver medal in the Olympics. Arnold Donner, who's the CEO of Carnival Cruise Line. You may hear those stories, but there's other stories as well. And people who, and everyday people, who've actually never had a voice to tell their story. And that's one of the reasons why we decided to do this, because we want everyone to have a voice. People who would normally not be heard will be heard in this documentary.
That is so true. And, you know, Leonard, when I think about that particular community, and I think of just so many communities throughout America that you never hear the stories. And so you're kind of the prototype, really, to help people understand that while we talk about telling the stories of our family, we just need to think about, well, wait a minute, our families grew up in the context of what was going on in that community also.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, the Zaha was very unique, and not just because I came from there, but let me say is that the trends that I'm seeing around the country about the plain communities, we had that in Desire, you know, where you didn't have to leave the community for anything. We had, you know, we had medical care. We had pharmaceutical companies. Well, I should say drug stores. We had shopping. We had food trucks, which is big doings now. We had food trucks back then with no problem. We had a lot of people, entrepreneurs who actually sold from their houses, you know, frozen cooked. Well, we call them huckabucks back then, but they also sold candies and plurines. And, you know, so we had all of that that now you see in other communities that's, you know, around the country that's in the suburbs. And they say, oh, well, we want to have it where you can go to school from kindergarten all the way up to high school. Well, we had that at Culver, you know, and we also had other schools around in the community. You know, we had Moton, we had Dunn, you know, and so it was a community that was intact, but of course it was by design that it was intact, and maybe not all for the right reasons, but it did function for us who lived within that community.
Right, it really did function for the people in the community, and I have to tell everybody, for full disclosure, I grew up in the community, so I know what Leonard is talking about. And right now, I mean, the bond is very, very strong. Leonard mentioned Culver. So tell us about Culver and what you're picking up as far as people and how they feel about that high school.
Well, you know, what I did, which I think may be a little unique in this documentary, is that I formed a private group on Facebook. And we close to 1,000 people, and basically I kind of screened everybody to make sure that they had some ties to the community. And so it's amazing the stories that I'm hearing from Culver. You know, Culver was built in 1958, as I said, before the community started in 45. But even before 45, there was a community there. And it was a lot, actually it was squatters. A lot of squatters were there because it was a swamp. It was, you know, it was a cypress swamp. And as time went on, the developers said, oh, well, we can do something with this. And, you know, it became the first place where the returning veterans, black veterans, could come and actually purchase a home. And it you know, looking in the local newspaper, I've researched some of the old articles, and they would say stuff like, hello, colored man, if you like to be part of history, come check out the houses that, and he gave the address and that type stuff. Well, that was the Desire community. So this was 1945, and as I talked to the elders, they always mentioned about their husbands were veterans, and that's why they came and they wanted home ownership. And in New Orleans, there was no other locations per se that you could have home ownership if you were African American. And so Culver became a big piece of the community. It was a school that had elementary, which was Helen S. Edwards. You had Culver Junior, and then you had Culver Senior. So you can go from kindergarten all the way to 12th grade to high school on one campus. Culver sat on 60 acres. And so it was a very interesting school. I enjoyed going there. To give you an example, my graduating class had 500, but we had other classes that may have been 600 or 700 people that graduated. And so it was a school that, you know, was involved a lot. We had a great band, had great football, we had great academics. You know, we had a lot of folks that went off to do, you know, big and better things like becoming judges and attorneys and, you know, engineers and you name it. We have the whole gamut that came out of that community.
Right, not to mention the teachers and the support.
We had educators. That's right. We had some of the best, and I will definitely vouch for that. We had some of the best educators in the country. And also definitely in the city, because they cared. Those were the educators that really cared for, you know, your well-being. It wasn't just about, you know, going to college. They prepared you for life. And, you know, we had, of course, we all have those special teachers. But, you know, in my case, it was a Mr. Hoover and Ms. Bush. And I guess Ms. Bush, because we spent so much time in the band that, you know, we were year-round in New Orleans. Of course, you got Mardi Gras and all that, so you're always practicing. And, you know, we always, as a unit, the band, even to this day, we're like a fraternity, a sorority that, you know, probably some of my best friends out of high school was in that band.
That's right. And what a wonderful memory about being a part of the Rams, the band. But you know what? Also, you had a lot of parental involvement. The parents
That's
right. were involved in what was going on in the school, and they encouraged the kids to be involved. But this was also an interesting community because it was like a walking community. People walked
That's right.
a lot. They
You're
walked
right.
blocks. You know, no
yeah.
such thing as taking a school bus if you lived in the Desire area. You walked to school.
That's right. That's right. And again, back to some of the elders, they mentioned about the fact that there was no bus service when they first got there, so they had to walk what we used to call up front. And once they got up front, they would actually have to catch the Desire streetcar that was up front. And that's kind of like where the name came from as well, a place called Desire, because, you know, a streetcar named Desire, they had the bus named Desire, and there was a street in Desire called Desire Parkway in Desire Street. And so, but a lot of them spoke of the fact that they had to walk, and, you know, a lot of people didn't have cars. And early on, if you had a car, you probably would have problems because there was no paved streets. So there was a lot of mud when it rained, and of course, New Orleans, it always rained. So they talk about, you know, even a taxi cab would not come back there on a rainy day.
Wow. But the people managed to get around somehow.
That's right. That's right.
Well, now, you mentioned something about a newspaper article. But tell us, I mean, because, you know, we're doing genealogy and you're talking about the history of the community, what does it take for you to gather information about the community to put in this documentary?
Well, you know, what happens is, and this is the hardest part, is that because of Betsy and Hurricane Katrina, a lot of the images and the pictures that people would have had, you know, have shared with me in order to produce this documentary are all gone now. And so this Kickstarter campaign is we're in the development stage right now. And what it is I've done some research to find that there are images out there. To give you an example, if I wanted to use a image of the Times-Picayune article that covered the New Orleans police and the Black Panthers, those images to use in a documentary cost anywhere from $250 on up per image. If I wanted to use a headline that was in the newspaper and use their ad, that costs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Even archival footage, I've actually checked into, there's some archival footage of incidents that happened in Desire. And to give you an example, that cost is $20 per second. So you can imagine a second goes mighty quick. And so these are all the costs that we have associated with doing a documentary that, you know, a lot of people don't, you know, kind of take for granted. You can't just grab pictures that you see off the internet and say, I'm going to put this in my documentary. That would be great, but all of that costs. And so in order for me to give the best story or tell the best story, I need images to support what's being said by the people who I'm interviewing. And as you know, they talk about the dirt roads and all that stuff. You know, it'd be great to have a picture of a dirt road there so you can see, and it is in Desire. You know, as some filmmakers, you may see images where they'll use an image from another location, but it still talks about the same subject, so they'll use it that way. But I kind of prefer using images that associate with the community that I'm talking about. That gives it more credibility, I think. And so it's just a cost associated with all of this, and that's one of the biggest pieces of doing this, is that, you know, we are halfway into the development stage. I think I've interviewed now well over 40 people. And, you know, of course, there's others that I have on my top list. And then there's other people that I know I would want to interview, you know, because as we talk, I have conversation in the Facebook page, a group, there's always conversations about, oh, did you know so-and-so? And it's like, okay, wow, let's talk a little bit more about that story. And then next thing you know, oh, well, that's my uncle or that's my aunt. And so that's all part of the genealogy part of it as well, because these are family stories that may have never been told. Even family members may not know about them. And so as you do research and you go back and forth and, you know, somebody might say, oh, I remember when such and such happened. Well, then now I'm on the Internet. I'm Googling, you know, what happened in Desire, da-da-da-da-da. And you'd be surprised the articles that come up. And, of course, you know, being a genealogist, I have paid subscriptions to a lot of the newspapers. And of course, some of it is not online, so you actually have to go to these repositories and actually pull these records and that type. And to give an example, there's a lot of stuff out there, but it's all over the place. And, of course, that takes time and effort. But you know about that, being a genealogist yourself.
Absolutely. And so, Leonard, when exactly is the Kickstarter campaign? Tell people about that.
Okay, the Kickstarter will launch October 1st. It's going to run for 30 days. And the goal is to raise $25,000 to cover those costs, like I mentioned before, about archival footage and images, and also to any newspaper articles and music. Yeah, of course, you got to have music, good music, to support a documentary. And so at this stage, I don't know where the music will come from. I do have a piece that I'm using in the trailer, but, you know, of course, that costs as well. And then what I'm also doing is that as people pledge different levels, there are perks that come along with your pledges. You know, like, of course, there's a T-shirt. Everybody has a T-shirt. There will be a poster, and then we'll also have VIP tickets for the premieres and that type stuff, and that's all based on what level of pledge that you give.
Okay, and then where can people find out about the campaign?
Okay, we actually have a website up. It's called aplacecalleddesire.com, and that will be the focal point of where everybody can go. The Kickstarter campaign will be on page one as soon as it's official October 1st. I also have on that website some of the interviews, just clips, not the full interviews, but clips of the people that we've interviewed. And some of them tell a little interesting stories. Of course, I'm keeping the best for last, which will go in the documentary. But some of the clips of the same people, but you know, they might make a little statement, like I'm about to post the 96-year-old elder that we have from the community, and some of the statements that she make you really think, you know, and we have fun. You know, that's the other part of that is that, you know, when I interview people, I like to just have a conversation with them. I don't want them to be, you know, afraid of the camera and that type. So, we laugh and, you know, we've even had people cry. You know, that's all part of it. You know, because the documentary of this nature is emotional at times, because you're going to remember the good times, especially if you lived it. But also people who didn't live in the community will also appreciate it, because it shows, you know, people with resistance to, you know, struggles. You know, people will be inspired to do, you know, other things, because in spite of all what they had to deal with, they still succeeded, and that's what the story really tells. The people who lived in a community who had the struggles, and there was a lot of struggles, but in spite of that, we still was able to succeed.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, if individuals would like to contact you, how would they do that?
Okay, they can reach me by phone. My office number is 337-453-4684. They can reach me by email.
Would you say that again?
337-453-4684.
Okay, 4684.
And they can also reach me by email, and my email is info@aplacecalleddesire.com.
Okay, info@aplacecalleddesire.com. Okay, everyone, and please continue to look at this project. as a prototype for those of you that may want to do something similar. Now, tell us what your goal is so we could know just what needs to happen here, because this is a Kickstarter and we want to see this documentary become a reality.
Okay, well, the first phase, which is this phase we're in, like I say, we're in development stage, and of course in production is next and then post-production, but we're finishing up. And the development actually covers a lot of the research that we have to do as well. So I've done interviews, and I'm kind of like on a hold with interviews for now because I'm now looking for supporting images or supporting footage or supporting maps or whatever. So at that stage, I'm in the research stage right now. And so the $25,000 that we're asking, of course, if we get more, that would be great because that will move us into the production stage, and that's the where we start putting all the pieces together. But as I grab interviews and that type, I'm editing as I go along because, you know, I don't want to, at the end, have all this to do. Because my launch date, and it's a very aggressive launch date, is hopefully the beginning of next year. It'll be February where we actually will see the documentary on the screen. And so,
oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so that's very aggressive, though. Let me say that again. And so if I can get the supporting from all the interviews that I've had, and, you know, I have writers, you know, of course, there's people behind the scenes, not just myself, that's doing writing. I have, you know, people who live in the community that's also telling the story. They're writing articles for the website. And then there's people who proof what I write, because I always got to have my stuff proof. I just like to put my thoughts on paper and hopefully somebody can. And I have, you know, I have a team of people that do that, and my two sisters and my brother and of course my daughter and wife who actually always help when I have a new project. But anyway, that's why phase one is important, because this is where you start getting all the pieces together for the story. And, of course,
right,
in the production mode, the next phase is when we start crafting the story to make it mean something, you know, to not just us who live there, but other folks. Because, you know, if we just fill the auditorium with people who live there, then it's not going to be the same dramatic effect that we want to reach a lot of people out there who may have been through the same trials and tribulations, but in spite of that have been able to move on.
That's right. And remember, this is a New Orleans story. It's a community
yes.
story. It's a family story. And so as many people as possible should be in here supporting this story, this documentary. And so, Leonard, I want to just thank you so much. You have taken the initiative. That's all we need is one person, two people, to take the initiative to document what's happening in the community so that that story is not lost. And that is what a place called Desire will be, a story that's not lost. So thank you so much for coming on, Leonard. I look forward to just hearing more about the project and reading what you're placing on Facebook and also looking at the trailer when it comes out. So any parting words before we end today's show?
Well, first of all, I want to definitely thank you again for having me on the show and letting me announce the Kickstarter campaign, which is most important. And, you know, I just want to tell the story of, you know, people, like I say, who the voiceless, who normally doesn't have a voice to go out there and say, okay, this is what I did or whatever. And, you know, it's not about bragging anything, but it's just to say that, you know, if I could do it, you can do it. That same, you know, everybody has that mentality that, you know, it'd be great if whatever you do, that you put forth enough effort to get it done. And so
right.
It's a great story. Desire is a great story. It was a great community. We want to see it come back, rebound. There's a lot of movement there. But then, of course, there's other issues that have to be addressed as well. And that
right.
would definitely take a couple of hours. But anyway,
okay.
We want to definitely, again, thank you. And hopefully we get all the support we need to get this into the big screen.
Okay, thank you so much. And everyone, I just want you to know, your ancestors left footprints. Therefore, you should follow the clues that are presented to you through oral history family records, community records, and research at the National Archives and beyond. Please tune in on Thursday for my show on DNA. Thank you so much for joining Research at the National Archives and Beyond. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett. Have a great day, everyone. Goodbye, Leonard.
Bye-bye.
Of a drill instructor directing a musical. Town Hut! Get those tap heels in line and let me see those jazz hands! Are you bundling your home and auto insurance through Progressive? Can you hear me through those sequins?
Bundle your home and auto through Progressive and save.
Left, 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 and step ball change.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates. Home insurance provided and serviced by other select insurers.